At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
All right, remember, the machine knows if you're lying. First statement, Carvana will give you a real offer on your car all online.
False.
True, actually. Oh. You can sell your car in minutes.
False? That's gotta be...
True again. Carvana will pick up your car from your door, or you can drop it off at one of their car vending machines.
Sounds too good to be true, so true!
Finally caught on. Nice job. Honesty isn't just their policy, it's their entire model. Sell your car today, too.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
Hey, y'all, welcome back to the Don't Mom Alone podcast. I'm your host, Heather McFadden, and this is the place where I get to walk alongside you and connect you with people and resources so you know that you don't mom alone. And in this episode, number 552, I'm welcoming to the show, Mark Cameron.
Attachment is the way a brain is designed. We all have an attachment style, and it's either secure or it's one of these insecure styles, because that's how our brains work. So this is the design. So when you can understand the design, then you know how it works. And so you know how to repair it. And so exactly like what you're saying, I mean, as you know, I'm a Christian. I know you're a Christian. You probably got a lot of Christians who listen to this podcast, but that's what's happening. When we can go back and we can tell our story from a safe place, yeah, we call it inner healing, and that is what is happening. But when you understand the neuroscience, it's not magic. It's God's design, right?
Mark is a licensed marriage and family therapist. He's also a co-leader of the organization How We Love, which was founded by Milan and Kay Yurkovich. He is joining me today to talk about a topic that really drew him into wanting to work with the organization How We Love. It's the topic of attachment styles and developing secure attachment. And if that's sounding a little bit familiar to you, it may have been because I've had previous episodes on it. Several years ago, I had a couple come on talking about the six needs of every child and how you can help your children develop safe attachment. And then we republished that in summer of 2024. You can find that link in the show notes. And then last year at this time, I had my friend Carissa come on and we talked about building healthy relationships by exploring adult attachment patterns. And we talked about how attachment can go awry and how we can repair it and how we can help develop it in our kids. Well, today I've invited Mark back on because I just feel like it is such an important thing to really understand. And the way that How We Love frames it up, I thought was a little bit different than what we shared a year ago. And they have so many resources for you. In the show notes, you're going to find a love style quiz that will help you understand your attachment style. There's a book that Mark is releasing called Understanding Your Attachment Style. And there's so many freebies. We put a link to it on the How We Love website to support you. So I wanted you to know, yes, it's the Don't Mom Alone podcast, but I'm all about helping support your marriages and your family structure, even outside of your nuclear family. And with the holidays, I know some of those relationships can be strained, and we're wondering, why do I keep reacting this way? So we're going to talk through that today. Definitely, like I said, check out the show notes with all the links, and let's get right to it. Here we go. Mark, welcome to the Don't Mom Alone podcast.
I'm so happy to be here.
Oh my goodness. Okay, people listening know I'm a big fan of talking about attachment. I've been learning about it myself. And so when your name and the name of your book, Understanding Your Attachment Style, crossed my email, I was like, yep, we're going to talk. Got to have Mark on the show. And then when I saw that you work for and have worked with Milan and Kay Yurkovich, am I saying that right?
You are. Nailed it.
The authors of the book, How We Love, which is a book I came across, oh my gosh, probably, I don't even know, maybe 15 years ago, 12 years ago, I don't know. But it was the first book I'd kind of read on attachment styles. And so y'all, check out that one too. I mean, so many good things out there. So you've gotten to study with them. And now doing your own work and doing your own book. And so let's do it. Let's talk about attachment style.
I'm ready.
You're ready. And y'all, I did link in the show notes to the two episodes we did last year at this exact time on attachment, if you want to learn even more. But give us your definition. What would you say attachment is, attachment style is, all of that?
Yeah, so 80 years of research has been done on attachment styles. And what researchers have observed is that a way a mother interacts with her baby and is able to identify what type of cry that baby is initiating, whether it's a hungry cry, a tired cry, or a dirty diaper cry, and their ability to be able to respond to the baby forms a security and forms a trust if the mom can get that accurate. And when it's not accurately perceived, that's called misattunement. And coping strategies are developed by a baby. And that happens to us throughout the history of our childhoods here, how well both of our parents can pick up on our needs and whether we can trust them to meet them or whether we form strategies of them going unmet or how to get them met. And that's how attachment styles form. And so there's only one secure attachment style. But when it doesn't go the way that it's supposed to work in the design, then we form these strategies and those become insecure attachment styles.
And it's important for people to know insecure is it's different. You're using the word insecure, but it's not about like how you feel about yourself.
Yeah, it doesn't mean that you're not a confident person. It just means that there's some insecurities around the expectations of bonding with others. And so that's what attachment style is. And attachment style is the way that we've learned to bond, and that attachment style that we form in childhood follows us into adulthood, and it wreaks havoc in relationships.
Yeah, in a variety of ways.
Variety of ways, exactly.
And I know some of you here are like, oh no, the mom didn't respond 100% of the time. No, this is like, I think in the last interview, I did 30% of the time. If you're attuning, then secure attachment happens.
Yeah, it just, as long as it happens, I would say more often than not, then secure attachment happens.
Okay.
Yeah.
And y'all can dig into that episode to know how to be the kind of mom who's attuning. But today I really want to focus in on how this impacts our marriages. And then as we're heading into the holidays, a lot of us may be triggered by family that we're going to interact with that we may not interact with any other time of the year, and how those patterns that maybe we've grown out of are showing back up. So I'd love for you to talk about the different types of insecure attachments. Kind of tell us the labels, because they're a little different than maybe the traditional ones.
Yeah. So I'm going to start with the avoider. So the avoider is really avoidant attachment. And so avoiders grew up in homes where there's not a lot of talk about emotions and feelings. Okay. And so this kid might fall over, hurt themselves, and start to cry. And the parent might say something like, come on, you're okay. You know, rub some dirt on it. It's going to be fine. Or there's nothing to be scared of. There's no monsters under the bed. Be brave. You know, go to sleep. Or there's nothing to worry about. It's going to turn out okay. And so
We think we're parenting like this is good. We're building resilience. This is the tricky part, is we're kind of told like, yeah, let them be independent.
Exactly. But our emotional states say something about ourselves. And so when we're rebuffed in this way, and really the overarching message the kid receives is you're overfeeling. Okay, they end up learning to go off their parents' cues, and they turn the volume down on their emotions because they're not being met. Now, typically in this home or from this parent, there's an emphasis on performance, getting stuff done, academics, athletics. Okay, and that's where this kid gets their attaboys or their attagirls. And so they learn to perform. And so they grow up, they go into adulthood with learning how to turn the volume down on their emotions, right? Because emotional needs aren't recognized or responded to. And then they get all of these affirmations for performance. And typically this person does really well in the working world. And so they get a lot of affirmations for how they are. But and they're attracted to others because they're consistent and they're pretty even keeled. But when it comes to deep intimacy in a relationship or conflict, well, the definition of empathy is, I know what it feels like for you because I know what it feels like for me. But if I don't go there with my feelings, if I push him aside and just move on and get over it, then I'm uncomfortable dealing with other people's emotions, and then I expect other people to do the same as what I do. And so they will try, avoiders are more problem solvers. They just kind of want to fix it for you, fix your problem. So, and really it's about so that you will stop emoting because they feel uncomfortable with that. And then if that doesn't work, if there's a conflict that occurs, they will distance, they will avoid, they'll separate, waiting for you to get over it. So that's the avoider.
So good. I may or may not be married to someone that's married. That's why I'm smiling and nodding over here. Okay, it's great. There's a lot of avoiders out. This is not, I mean, can we say, I don't like when we put people in boxes. There are a lot of people who use the avoider insecure attachment style.
Well, it's not about putting someone in a box. It's about helping somebody understand how they have been shaped and how their expectations for relationships have been formed and how they drive problematic patterns.
And not blaming parents, just knowing the why and the how.
Exactly. It's all about explaining, because we can only give what we know. And if we don't understand this, we generally repeat the patterns that we've learned from others. So it's not about blaming, but it is about explaining. And as we get into secure attachment and the good news of attachment style, I'll explain why that part is important. That's an avoidant attachment, which in my book and in the book How We Love, as you mentioned, we call the avoider. Then there are two different types of anxious attachment styles. Most people don't realize that, but attachments rated on a spectrum. And so there's two ends to the spectrum of anxious attachment. And one of them we refer to as the pleaser, which is a people pleaser person. So this person grows up in a home where they learn to manage their parents' emotions. They typically have a parent whose anger scares them, or a parent who is highly critical, or maybe very anxiously worried and doesn't let the kid explore, or might be chronically depressed. And so this kid learns to become, they become the good kid in a way to manage their parents' emotions, right? Mm-hmm. And they learn to try and predict what their parents' mood is and calm them down. And so they become the good kid. They don't generally do a lot of exploration, but they don't also act out. And so they keep the parent, and that's their way of keeping the parent calm, because when the parent gets distressed, they feel anxious on the inside. Now, this person grows up, goes into adulthood, being a pleaser type person. Now, they usually miss the nice guy, miss the nice girl. And that's what's attracted to others, because they're low conflict. They have an easygoing nature, but they can become codependents. Mm. And so you'll ask this person, where do you want to go eat? And a lot of times you'll say, well, I don't know. What do you want to do? And really, they think, well, I don't care, or I want you to be happy. But that's not true. They don't really know a lot of the times, because in order to know your likes and preferences, you got to be able to explore them. And they gave in a lot or weren't allowed to explore. And then it's not really that they want other people to be happy. They don't want other people to get upset, sad, or angry, because when other people get upset, they feel anxious on the inside. So when it comes to relationship patterns, they tend to please and appease, especially when it comes to conflict. And so they're givers, they give of themselves, but they lose themselves in that giving, and the relationship becomes unbalanced. So that's one type of anxious attachment. And then there's another type of anxious attachment, and in the research it's called an anxious resistant type. And in my book, in the book How We Love, we refer to that style as the vacillator, because this person vacillates back and forth between what they want. And so this style occurs when there's intermittent connection and attention, and sometimes that forms from the parents. It's based off of the parents' availability or the parents' mood. And availability could be, especially in our society, there's a lot of broken homes, there's a lot of divorced custody situations. And so a kid bounces back and forth. Maybe one parent's more present than the other, or maybe it's even custody. And so they're always with a parent, but they're never with the same parents. So they get some connection and then they're made to wait on it. It also could be a parent's job, a parent who travels or who's in the military and goes on deployments, or a parent who works unusual shift hours or something like that. And so the child gets some connection that they enjoy, but then they're made to wait on it. And then in the waiting, they feel unseen, unknown, misunderstood, and they get mad. And so when the parent returns, they protest. They want to show the parent that I'm upset. So they pout, they sulk, or they have an outburst. But usually the parent doesn't, if it's based on their mood, they're not as aware. And if the connection is based off their physical availability, they might not be able to change that. And so this kid grows up, goes into adulthood with their longing for connection turned on high. and they tend to idealize relationships. And so when they meet someone, they're all in, especially with dating, because dating is all about time, attention, and connection, all the things that they're craving. And so, but they bond too quickly. They share mm-hmm. too much too soon. They create this idealized image of the person in their mind. And then when the relationship shifts to a more realistic phase, or they get let down, all those feelings come flooding back of feeling misunderstood, unseen, unknown. And then they do protest behavior. They sulk, they pout, they outburst, trying to get their partner, their spouse, or other people to see that they're hurt and then to pursue and come after them. But they are ambivalent, meaning they have conflicting emotions. And so they can push people away, even though they want other people to come toward them. And it can be very confusing.
Differentiate for me, like with the avoider, the parent present, but just dismissing the emotional state and not attuning. And then with the vacillator, the parent is attuning at some times and not. It's like inconsistent.
Yeah, it could be. Yes, it could be a parent who attunes sometimes and not, or it could be between a mix of two different parents. Right. One parent attunes sometimes, and then they're not available, and then they're with the other parent who's not as attuned.
And then one thing I remember learning was, like, I had an older sister, a 16 years older than me sister, and she provided a lot of secure attachment that was maybe missing in a parent. And so it was like I ended up with two adult type people that were providing secure attachment, but it wasn't necessarily my parents. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And so attachment, as I mentioned, is rated on a continuum. So we can be mildly, moderately, or very much like these attachment styles. But there's, you know, a continuum also has two ends, even though they don't fully reach somewhere, right? But there's two sides to it. And most of us grow up with two parents. So what I can get away with mom, I can't get away with dad, or vice versa. So I learn to bond with them independently. And so I create strategies for each. And one parent typically is the primary parent. So that's where the bulk of my attachment style was formed. But I can have strategies from another attachment style. So sometimes you can see a little bit of a mix. Somebody might have a mix of the two anxious attachment styles.
And I'm imagining if a grandparent lived with you and was providing that.
Yeah, it's not support. Necessarily a parent. It's about who are our caregivers. So some people grow up with aunts, uncles, or grandparents too. So it's whoever is your primary caregiver or a significant caregiver in your life. You form your attachment style from them.
This episode is brought to you thanks to sponsors like Thrive Cosmetics. And I'll tell you what, they are getting me through. I think I have a Christmas party almost every night, and I'm not meaning to brag, but it's really fun. Also, it means putting on makeup every day and not just like the minimum, like I do in the summer. I'm putting on the whole glam shebang. And with Thrive Cosmetics, they have so many different products, and I love layering them and using them and knowing that they're going to last from my Christmas tea all the way to my party late that night. If you've never checked out Thrive Cosmetics, let me tell you why I love them. One, they're clean. They're 100% vegan, cruelty-free, made with clean, skin-loving ingredients. Two, every time you buy something from Thrive Cosmetics, they give back. So they donate products and funds. I'm saying funds, money, to help communities thrive. They've given over $150 million in product and cash donations to over 600 giving partners. When you buy something, you directly fuel that impact. That is beauty with a purpose. Now, I love their Infinity Waterproof Eyeliner. They have 8 different shades. I absolutely, hands down, best thing ever, love their Liquid Lash Extensions mascara. Told my sister-in-law about it over Thanksgiving. She thought I had fake lashes. Y'all, that's how good that is. I'm going to tell you about the Brilliant Eye Brightener because I love using it to add a little glam this time of year. It is a waterproof eyeshadow highlighter stick. You can use it to brighten and open your eyes. They also have different shades. They have 32 different shades, so you just can use it as a eyeshadow. But then they have like a really, it's like a white, not a white, a little bit more creamy than a white, but I can use it in the corner of my eyes to kind of give them a little lift, to add maybe not look so tired, and you will have a radiant eye look for sure. Now, Whether you check out the mascara, the eyeliner, there's so many great products. Complete your look. Go to thrivecosmetics.com/DMA for an exclusive offer of 20% off your first order. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS.com/DMA. Okay, so we've done avoider, pleaser, vacillator. So
yeah.
And now we're going to get into
the last one is disorganized attachment. And so people who have disorganized attachment, they come from homes that are chaotic. Really, their needs are reduced to survival. So typically in these homes, they're dangerous. There's abuse, there's addiction, there's neglect, something like that is happening. And so this kid has this problem because they need, when we feel distressed as human beings, we run to a secure attachment figure. But also when we're in danger, we run away from the danger. So when the dangerous person is also your secure attachment figure, you get stuck between these two primal systems. And so it's called disorganized attachment because when they observe these kids in these clinical experiments or observations, the child doesn't know whether to run toward or away from the parent. And so these kids can create a mix of the attachment styles because they try everything and nothing works. So different things work at different times if they were in foster care and they bounced around between with different caregivers. Or what Milan and Kay Yerkovich, who wrote the book How We Love, has observed is that there are also times that this child can go one of two main ways where they realize that relationships have a one-up, one-down position. You know, there's an abuser and there's someone who gets abused. And so the person who becomes a controller-type attachment decides, well, I'm not going to be in the one-down position, so that means I'm going to be in this position. And so they control, but they control for predictability because the unpredictability caused the chaos, caused the danger in their life. And so they control. They tend to be very rigid, but they control their environment by controlling others. Or the victim resolves that, hey, I'm not going to be able to escape abuse, but I can reduce it by trying to stay quiet and under the radar and being submissive. And that reduces the frequency of it. And so they default to that role. And these two folks often find one another in adulthood and they end up in the cycle of abuse that we know is a real dynamic. And because the victim has learned helplessness, even when you show them a way out, oftentimes they stay. Because this is just familiar. This is what relationships they have learned have been liked.
Mm. Okay, well, y'all, I don't know if one of those popped out at you or maybe you're all secure. Do we need to talk about what secure looks like?
Yeah, so this is the premise of my book too, is the good news about attachment research. So attachment is really about how we are, not who we are. So all of us are born with some type of inborn temperament. You know, sensitivity is rated on a scale, and that's temperament. If you're an introvert, if you're an extrovert, that's just kind of how you're born. That can't be changed about you. That's about how you gain energy. Some of us are more detailed thinkers. Some of us are big picture thinkers and more creative. And that's just kind of how we, that's who we are, part of us. But attachment is how we are. It's how we're shaped by environment, how we've learned to attach and bond to others, what are our expectations. And even though these attachment styles formed in childhood, we go through two decades of conditioning. That's a long time, and that follows us. Research shows that we can actually change our attachment style. We can become more secure. And we can actually earn, it's called an earned secure attachment style because it takes work. But in order to earn a secure attachment style, you have to do something called create a coherent narrative. So coherent is something makes sense. Narrative is story. If we can make sense of our childhood story, if we can understand attachment and we can understand how we've been shaped, and we can see this, then we can work specific goals to work out of that. And so if we know the particular insecure attachment style we are, and if we know what secure attachment looks like, well, now we've got a path, we've got a journey, we've got a starting point, we've got an ending point, and we can know how do we work toward that. And so somebody who's more of the anxious pleaser, they don't have a lot of boundaries in them. They're not good at saying no or stop, and so they tend to overcommit. They avoid difficult conversations. So part of their growth is learning to lean into tension and be okay with that, and learning to have a voice in a relationship to hold equal balance. Whereas somebody who's more the other anxious attachment style, the vacillator. Well, they're pursuers, they're protesters. And so they need to learn to realize, you know, when they might be over pursuing at times and learn to back off to find balance. And somebody who's more of an avoider needs to learn how to language for emotions and how to express that and how to lean in and be present when other people are expressing emotions, because that's how we connect with others. We connect with others on an emotional level, in emotional connection. And so we're all trying, you know, the goal is all trying to get to the same place, but we're coming from different starting spots. And so the growth looks different for each of the attachment styles.
So in order to grow into earned security, we need to be aware of our childhood story, have a way to communicate, oh, this is why this and this and this, and that's why I respond the way that I do or react the way that I do. And in a couple, let's say a married couple, each person is doing that work, right?
That would be the hope, right? healthy things grow. So if so that's called growth. And so if we're each doing the work and each of us are part of a couple and we're both growing, then the relationship grows.
And so you're each doing your work. Do you often see, you mentioned the controller and the victim can sometimes marry each other. Do you find that avoiders and the pleaser vacillators marry each other?
Yes. Insecure attachment styles find insecure attachment styles, because secure attachment styles tend to find other secure attachment styles because they have language for what's going on the inside. And they know how to link emotions to need. Every emotion has a need. If I feel unheard, then I need to be heard. Right? If I feel sad, I need comfort. If I feel misunderstood, I need to be understood. And so if I can recognize what I'm feeling on the inside and put language to it, the other person knows what I'm feeling. Because we do two things with our emotions. We talk them out or we act them out, right? We verbalize or we dramatize. If I act them out, if I dramatize, if I sulk, if I pout, if I go quiet, well, you got to guess what is going on inside of me. But if I can tell you what's going on inside of me, now you have understanding. And if I can link emotions to needs and learn how to request for my needs, because I grew up in a relationship learning this language because my parents taught it to me, and learning that relationships can be safe and predictable and I can get my needs met, I'm confident to ask for them. And so they more likely get their needs met because they have language for them and they can link emotions to needs. And so they find other people who are like them. And so securely attached people generally end up with other securely attached people, because you can't take two insecure attachment styles, put them together and expect the relationship is going to be emotionally secure. That doesn't make sense. You know, the two parts don't equal the whole.
But they're drawn to each other somehow.
But they are drawn to each other because, so somebody who's a vacillator, the wound is inconsistent connection, right? And so guess what? An avoider is Mr. and Mrs. Consistency, right? And they're predictable. And so they often find one another. And then because somebody who's more avoidant has not really had someone who's pursued them, who's invested in them, now when the vacillator comes along and they're all in and there's all of this love and connection and pursuit, it feels amazing for them. And so so that's the couple dynamic, is the most frequent couple dynamic that we actually see in that show up to therapy, the avoider and the vacillator. So they tend to find one another. But again, the attachment styles don't bond well. They don't mesh well, right? So in the beginning, relationships are romanticized. And that's what happens typically at all relationships. And you show the best part of yourself, not to manipulate someone else, but because you're just feeling amazing. Yeah. And that's what side you put on, and you overlook, you know, red flags, or you overlook other behaviors. But then when it shifts and both people struggle for individuation, that's when the problems occur. And when two different attachment styles come together, it actually produces something in the book, How We Love, that is called a core pattern. Right. It's a very predictable, because both have certain expectations, and both, each of the attachment styles have certain particular triggers and particular reactivity patterns. And so if you can understand those and then you can see them happening, now you can do something about it. But oftentimes this stuff stays in the subconscious. We don't recognize the triggers. And so, but conflicts occur over the most minor issues. And then we just argue back and forth over the minor issues, unaware of what the original wound is underneath. And that's part of the coherent narrative building. If you can understand that, you can recognize the wound, then you can depersonalize what's happened, and you can recognize that my feelings right now are not really all about you. There's something else that occurred before, and it's trickling into the present.
A lot of my listeners are in the stage of parenting teens. And I feel like having lots of friends too in that stage, marriage, while when kids enter the picture, maybe that was a little bit of a blip and a bump and mm-hmm. some more conflict came in. I feel like these years, the conflicts have grown even more and those patterns become even more glaring maybe. Do you find that you're counseling couples in that stage a lot or not?
Yeah, I mean, I do therapy with people in all stages, but yes, of course, when you have kids, they're going to grow and they're going to meet that stage. And so what happens in the teen years is teens go through something called neural pruning, where their brains start to get rid of information that if it's unused, they think, okay, well, this is unused. I don't need this. I need to make room for more information to come in. That's called neural pruning. And then also in that stage, there's an individuation that happens. And so they want to push away from parents because they need to learn. It's really, it's adaptive because they need to learn how to be in the world by themselves, even though they're not ready right now, right? It's a progression. Growth is not like all of a sudden you're an adult. You grow toward this. And so they start to push back. But because of neural pruning and because of bodily changes and hormones, right, they become tense, they become angsty. And so when teens start to push away, if as a parent you have a rejection wound, you have an abandonment wound, right, that gets triggered inside of you. And teens don't follow social rules well. They don't hold it in well. Because if you say something they don't like, they're going to roll their eyes, they're going to sigh, they're going to stomp around. Right. Mm-hmm. And generally in the workplace, that may not typically happen. You'd hold it in if you didn't like something that your boss or a coworker said. Mm-hmm. But they break all of these social rules. And then that triggers us as parents. It triggers the wounds that we have inside of us. And so our attachment wounds come out, our reactivity comes out. But what I like to tell people is when you squeeze a tube of toothpaste, what comes out?
Toothpaste.
Well, why does toothpaste come out? Because that's what's inside. Because when you squeeze the tube of anything, whatever comes out is what's inside. So whatever's coming out of you is what's inside of you. But that wasn't put in there by you. That happened. That is, attachment is programming. And that was downloaded into you involuntarily in your childhood, right? Those wounds. And so what's coming out of you now when you're being squeezed is what we call reactivity. If you don't like it, that's the part that we got to learn to change.
And work together to sort it out. So I know you spend a section of your book talking about the comfort cycle, being a listener and then a speaker, having those roles like in couples therapy. So let's say we've got this couple, whether they've made it all the way to the teen years, parenting teens, and now it's showing up, or y'all have new young kids and you're listening to this episode. You're in treatment, you're becoming aware of your patterns, and you're working on actually listening to each other and not reacting out of that wounded message or pattern. Can you share with us ways that we can listen effectively? I know you have a section on it, but I thought it was really good, and I think it would be really helpful to those who are actually listening to us right now.
Yeah. So knowledge is not enough. I mean, we all know that diet and exercise leads to physical health, but how many of us do that? Right? Mm-hmm. Not many of us. And intent is not enough either. You know, the gyms have all these membership signups at the beginning of the year, but research shows that at least half of people have dropped off by February. And about 25 to 30% after the first 2 weeks, actually. So it's short-lived here. And so in order, we've got to practice whatever we want to become. So secure attachment is about, to become secure, we got to practice being secure. Mm. And so what you're describing here, the comfort circle, which is really outlined primarily in the book, How We Love. So Mylan and Kay's book is more focused on core patterns. What happens when two different attachment styles come together? And if two people do this work together, how can you mimic the cycle of bonding? That is how we are shaped growing up between a mother and a child or a father and a child. How do you do that together? And so the comfort circle is learning, how do we, instead of arguing back and forth about something, how do we split that time? And it's often the same amount of time or less when you factor in all the disconnection or the sulking that happens after conflict occurs. how do we split that time in two? And there's a clear listener, clear speaker, and one person goes first as the listener, and they listen for understanding, not for agreement. Most people listen for agreement, and they want to put multiple things on the table at the same time. Let's take one topic and let me listen for agreement. Let me draw out of you what emotions are you feeling, and I can connect. I can learn to connect and empathize with those emotions, even if I disagree with your perspective over something. And as we learn to do that for one another and take that time, we tend to settle down, right? We don't say as hurtful things to get the other person's attention. And when we are experiencing empathy and validation, right, we soothe. And we're more likely to listen well to someone else. And when you can do that for one another, you're more likely to get to resolution. And so that's the comfort circle. But what stops people from doing the comfort circle is their reactivity that they feel. They don't like to listen to things that they disagree with. Or they want to talk over someone, or they want to roll their eyes, or they want to speak in blaming and criticizing. And so my book is primarily focused on what work does the individual have to do so that they can recognize their triggers and reactivity and learn how to self-soothe and show up better, more effectively, more productively in this role. Now, I outline three different ways we listen. So there's attentive listening. So the opposite of attentive listening is inattentive listening. So if you're speaking to me and I'm not making eye contact and I'm on my phone, and you might say, hey, did you hear what I said? And I could repeat back everything that you said, but you didn't feel like I listened to you.
Can you say that's like also... I've gotten triggered if someone is maybe doing the dishes while I'm talking, or
cleaning, exactly,
or
because doing an activity. Because it's inattentive. Okay, yeah. So attentive listening is I'm facing you, I'm making eye contact, I'm nodding as you're talking, right? Even if my mind is somewhere else, it looks like I'm listening, so you believe that I'm listening. But as you said, when we get triggered when someone else is doing something else, like the dishes, it's because there's likely an unseen wound or an unheard wound underneath where we didn't feel fully seen, we didn't feel fully heard. And this neural network is being rekindled on the inside. But again, we're unaware of it. So it's out of our conscious awareness.
And that's why I like when we go on a walk, there's nothing else going on.
Right.
It feels like, even though we're not looking eye to eye, it feels more attentive because there's no other tasks being done.
And you're doing something together.
And we're doing something together. It's productive. It counts in the productivity bucket, but it does feel more like attentive listening.
Yes, exactly. And then there's active listening. The opposite of active listening is passive listening. And you've probably had this experience in an argument or in a disagreement with someone. Say, okay, you talk, right? And you know you're given the floor, but you also know you're being waited out. And so you get to express yourself, but you're not really sure how deep it's going. Right. And so the opposite of passive listening is active listening. And so active listening is a conversation. It's a dialogue. It's not a monologue. I'm drawing the other person out. I'm asking thoughtful questions as they're speaking. I'm engaged in what they're saying. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then the last one is reflective listening. Reflective listening is saying back so the other person knows I got it right. And it's not just repeating back. It's also reflecting emotional states. So if somebody is crying, I'm not going to have a big smile on my face, right? I'm going to mirror that, right? Because that's called inappropriate affect, right? I'm going to mirror it back to them, a sad look. I'm also going to offer empathy and validation statements. I'm so sorry that happened. That makes sense. That must be so painful. When others do this for us, it just feels good on the inside. And so when we can show up in these ways, when we can listen attentively, actively, and reflectively, we feel somebody is attuned to us. And attunement, as I mentioned before, how well a mother or a father picks up on what a baby needs. Attunement is actually the measure of attachment. That's how they measure attachment, is how well a parent is attuned to someone else. And we learn to be attuned to others based off of that experience that we had with ourselves. And so we can learn how to recondition in this way. If you have an active and willing partner willing to grow with you, you can learn to do the comfort circle, which is that structured listening exercise. And I do that in therapy over and over and over again until the skills start to become default for people.
This episode is brought to you thanks to sponsors like Honey Love. Now, I know this is one of those episodes that I'm sure moms are going to be sending along to their husbands to listen, maybe even a brother or an uncle. I don't know. But there's going to be guys in the house. And we're about to talk to some about something that is for the ladies. But here's the deal. Christmas is coming up. And if you are a really great guy, you may not know that she would want something like Honey Love. But I'm telling you what, it's the one thing she keeps not buying for herself. And she wears every single day and will feel great. Here's the deal. Honey Love, they make the most comfortable and supportive bras for all shapes and sizes. And whether you're in the smaller size or the bigger size, I'm telling you what, you are going to love Honey Love. First of all these holiday parties I was telling you about, they start with the right foundation. And I am super thankful that I have my Honey Love bra and shapewear. Don't forget to check out their shapewear. But right now, they have some great bra bundle deals. So it's time to stock up, ladies. If your bra is hanging on by a thread, this is the time. Try their new Cloud Embrace bra. I mean, what a name. It's the perfect treat yourself gift, or husbands again, you could surprise her. It's wireless. It's a t-shirt bra. It's sturdy. It's padded. It feels like a cloud. I'm just telling you, wireless is the way to go, because it's so painful by the end of the day to be poked all day. I love having these Honey Love bras for wearing my favorite Christmas PJs around the house, because I have teenage boys and I still got to wear a bra under my PJs, and Honey Love makes that possible. Definitely check out their shapewear, like I said, because they have targeted compression that enhances your curves, doesn't squish them. It compresses where it needs to, and it's easy and more comfortable where it needs to be. Honey Love is an independent, female-founded brand. They are, all of their products are intelligently designed by women who actually wear them. So treat yourself or someone you love to Honey Love this holiday season. And right now you can save 20% off at honeylove.com/DMA. Use our exclusive link, honeylove.com/DMA for Don't Mom Alone, to grab your discount. After you order, they'll ask you where you heard about Honey Love. So please support our show. Let them know we sent you. Celebrate the season feeling confident and comfortable with Honey Love. I'm grateful to bring you this content thanks to sponsors like Storyworth. And I know in this episode, we're talking about the challenges of family and how we react to them and some of the patterns that maybe were put in us based on how we were parented. Well, I know family's tricky, but I also know they bring so much joy, and I am grateful for the connections and the foundations I have from my parents and my aunts and my uncles and my cousins. And maybe one of those people in your life who's very meaningful, who was that person who provided a safe attachment for you, maybe you don't know a lot about their story. And so if you're looking for something to get them this Christmas, I will highly recommend Storyworth Memoirs. It might sound a little intimidating to write a whole memoir. I'll tell you what, writing books isn't easy, but they make it easy. It's a gift your loved one won't see coming, something that makes them feel truly special. And it turns out it's a gift for you too, because each week Storyworth is going to email your loved one a memory-provoking question that you get to choose. Questions like, what were your favorite toys as a child? What are you most proud of? And then your loved one, all they have to do is respond to that email with a story. And here's the deal. They can either write it over email, they can record it over the phone for Storyworth to transcribe. It's so easy. There's no apps or passwords. It's perfect for even your least tech-savvy relatives. And then after a year, Storyworth compiles all those stories and photos into a beautiful keepsake hardcover book. And the photos are printed in vibrant color. It is a treasure your loved one and you will be able to share and revisit for generations. And what's great about Storyworth is, even though they've been around for years, they're still innovating. They have new features to make storytelling even easier, with personalized questions, magic editor, magic layout, new book designs. They make the photos beautiful, and they've just rolled out a Spanish language support. What's not changing is that the customers love Storyworth. They've printed over 1 million books. They've preserved 35 million family stories since their founding 13 years ago. I have several family members who have passed in recent years, and I wish I could have given them this. I wish I had their stories recorded. So don't let it pass you by this year. Make 2026 the year that you capture these stories. Give your loved ones a unique keepsake that you will treasure for years. Storyworth Memoirs, right now, save $10 or more during their holiday sale when you go to storyworth.com/DMA. That's Storyworth, marriageandfamilytherapist.com/DMA to save $10 or more on your order. And if y'all didn't still get the attunement thing, I love the example you shared where you're like, it's not necessarily that a parent isn't trying to care or providing care. It's more, let's say a mom comes in to feed the baby, but the baby needs a diaper change. It's just like, and that's just a basic care need. But if it's an emotional need and it's being mismet, I just want people to understand it's not like not attuning is doing nothing. It's mainly that you're just missing what the need actually is.
Right. There's a difference between responsiveness and attunement, right? Mm-hmm. If you feed a baby and the baby is tired or needs a diaper change, a parent is responding, but yeah. not in an attuned way because it's not what the baby needs in that moment. So that's what attunement is. So a lot of times, you know, as we talked about, somebody could say, don't worry about it. It's going to be fine, right? We want to say something to lift their mood, but you can't connect with an emotion that you are at the same time trying to change.
Mm. Okay. Ooh, put that on a shirt.
That's really key.
Put that on a shirt.
And we do this. We do this. And it's not because we don't care. It's because it's hard for us to see someone else in distress. But what people need is they need attunement. We feel much better if somebody can understand us and empathize and validate us, even if our problem doesn't get fixed, right? We feel much better if someone can do that for us.
Have you ever been with someone though that they're like, you know, you're doing all the attuning and you're reflecting their emotion, they're communicating, but they really just want you to solve the problem, and they don't even recognize that what they actually need is
innately we do want that. Even people who avoid us, if they are really distressed, even though they don't have the skills themselves, they will feel better if somebody does that for them. But there are times that we need a problem solved too, of course. Of course, we need to be, you know, we need help in the distress, but we need to soothe before we solve. Don't just solve. If you just solve the problem, let's just knock it out of the park, let's just fix it and you'll be okay. We don't feel seen, known, and understood as a person. So that's key.
Okay, before you have to go, I'm going to extend our interview a little bit just so you know.
Let's do it.
Holidays. I know for me, I'm going to be with a couple of my brothers, and then I'll be with my husband's family and a couple of his sisters. And even though that's not my family, anyway, we're all going to be with people. They're amazing. We love them. But sometimes these patterns come up that we thought we'd dealt with. Can you give us any kind of tips or strategies or guide on navigating that?
Yeah. And this is really good because sometimes people will blame their reactivity on someone else because they'll say, well, I'm okay until you come around. Right. But what happens to us too is like, you know, when we're, our expectations for relationships are higher in those who we are bonded closest to. Okay. Mm. So these come out more prevalent with our parents, with our spouses, with our kids, because we have higher expectations in our relationships with them. Whereas when we go to work, there's lower expectations. We're less connected with them. And because we fall into these family roles, when we get around our families at the holidays, we often fall into the familial roles where a parent might expect you just, you know, I'm going to tell you to do something, I expect you to just go and do it. Or we're the youngest, and so we remain a little bit more quiet at the dinner table. Or like you said, somebody then is a little bit more demanding, and then that just starts to trigger us on the inside, because again, it's a reminder of old wounds that we've had. Yeah. And so as we learn to do this growth work, you really need to be intentional. If you can recognize your triggers, if you can have language for them, right? Our brain integrates because emotions are generally held on the right side of the brain. And the right side of the brain is disconnected from logic and language and reasoning. And the left side of the brain primarily, or the prefrontal cortex right behind the forehead, is more the executive functioning skills, logic, language, and reasoning. And so when we get triggered, we react from just the right side of the brain. But when we can build that coherent narrative and when we can have language for what we're feeling on the inside, and then our brain starts to integrate, starts to work together, right? It's that dual processor of emotion and logic and language. And when we can do that, when we can do that work, will show up when we get into these old situations again, or familiar situations again, we'll be able to handle it a little bit more effectively. But you've got to do the work outside of that. You can't just expect that you'll just show up differently. You practice what you become. You become what you practice.
So this book comes out December 2nd. Y'all have about 23 days to read your section, do your work. No, I think it's 100% true, because we each have our own triggers that lead to a thought, leads to behavior and a feeling and all of that. And that is going to be unique. And you can't say, well, when you're with Aunt Helen and she says this and you feel rejection, like, we're going to have to pay attention for ourselves and kind of have that a meta view of what we're feeling in our bodies before we respond.
Right. It's called metacognition is what you said. Is thinking about our thoughts is called metacognition. I mean, this is the good news about it, is if we can have a secure relationship, someone else who's practicing security with us, and we can talk about the wounds, we actually heal. Because when we remember things, we don't remember the original event. We remember the last time we remember that event. And so if we can talk about an event and have an attuned response to it, even if it's with another person who didn't cause the original wound, and if we can have that experience over and over and over again, that actually changes the neural pathway that we have, and it shifts and we heal and our triggers actually reduce. And so, yeah, then Aunt Helen won't trigger us as much if we do the practice work outside of this.
Well, and what you just described is, I do a lot of inner healing prayer stuff with people, and we're going back to memories and what kind of pattern thinking started there and kind of healing it up. But it's nothing magical. It's what you're describing. We're kind of re-shifting the memory so that it has a different flavor.
Exactly. It's the design. Yeah. It's, you know, attachment is the way a brain is designed. We all have an attachment style, and it's either secure or it's one of these insecure styles. Because that's how our brains work. So this is the design. So when you can understand the design, then you know how it works. And so you know how to repair it. And so exactly like what you're saying, I mean, as you know, I'm a Christian. I know you're a Christian. You probably got a lot of Christians who listen to this podcast, but that's what's happening. When we can go back and we can tell our story from a safe place. Yeah, we call it inner healing, and that is what is happening. But when you understand the neuroscience, it's not magic. It's God's design, right? All science is observation.
It's God saying, hey, I have a way out. You're not stuck. You're not forever. Like, if you're like, man, blame my parents. Oh, I'm so mad. It's like, no, you're not stuck. Growth is forward. Movement, healing, restoration, all God's words.
Right. The more we find out about the Bible, or the more we find out about science, actually, which is just observation of the natural, the more we realize that the Bible actually tells us these truths. It's just not talking about all of the neuroscience, it's just telling us the practical part of what to do.
Yeah.
But it falls within the way that we're designed.
So in some of your book, you talk too about the regulation and fight or flight, and we might have those kind of patterns when we're with family over the holidays. Do you have a kind of way to not go to our reactive brain, but to kind of go into that metacognitive, like if we're in an actual situation, food's getting put on the table, there's chaos, there's like, that is not probably the best, going to be the best version of us. What's a great tip so that we can respond and not react?
Yeah, well, I love what you're saying. I explain the difference between responding and reacting. Reacting is just repeating something that you've already learned, whereas responding is assessing what's the most appropriate thing to do in this situation. And that's the reason why we call them first responders. We don't call them first reactors, right? But how many of us are first reactors when a crisis occurs, or when we feel triggered? And so in order to respond, though, you have to first learn how not to react. So if you can understand, and I list all this out, if you can understand your attachment style and your specific triggers, and you can understand your specific reactivity patterns, you can start to identify them. They shift from being in the unconscious to being in the conscious. You can recognize them, you can put language to them, and that's the first thought. And so there's four stages of competency building in anything that we learn. First, the first stage is unconscious incompetence. we're unaware that we're getting it wrong. And then we will shift to conscious incompetence. We start to become aware, but we can't stop the train. It's left the station, but we know what is
like, why do I keep doing this? Why do I keep doing this? Yeah.
But we start to become aware of that. And then there's conscious competence where it takes effort to do the right thing. And eventually do that over and over and over again. Again, it's neural pathway building. It shifts to unconscious competence, just like getting in the car. We just get in the car and we're competent enough, most of us, to drive safely, right? But we don't think about it. Yeah. It's become conscious competence at that point. And so there's no quick, you know, I know in our society we want like, give me the quick fix. Give me like the five things that I can do that I'm getting there. If you read the book though, and you start to become aware of it, it's a process to get there, but you will start that growth journey. And it's a lifelong journey too. You know, secure attachment is on a continuum. Secure attachment just means I respond more often than not. But if I respond 51% of the time this way and 41% are reacting securely, I still got a ways to go. So we won't complete, there's no perfect individuals out there. We're not completely going to mess, not get things wrong. But secure individuals know how to recognize, take accountability, initiate repairs. And so these conflicts happen less and less.
So good. Y'all need to get the book. Hope we've sold you on it, because I'm sold. I need to have a copy I can write in all the time. I'm going to share it with the people. Thank you so much, Mark, for being with us. We have put links to all your places that you are, but is there anywhere you like to connect with people specifically?
Yeah, people can find me most on so I'm talking about How We Love, because after I read How We Love, I looked up Mylan and Kay and I found that they were here in Southern California, and then I went to work for them. And yes, they're at now their mid-70s, and so they asked my wife and I to take over for them. So we go and do speaking events, but we also have a website that has digital products on, and we have a free attachment style quiz on there. And we have 5,000 to 7,000 people a month who take that quiz. And so you can go there, you can find out your attachment style, you can find out more about your attachment style. A lot of resources on there for how to grow, a lot of different webinars, one of them being, you know, how to be an adult around your family during the holidays.
Okay, there we go.
So yeah, so you can find me there. And I'm also on a national call-in radio show called New Life Live. It's a Christian call-in, it's the largest Christian call-in radio show. It has about 2 million listeners, and it airs weekdays, and people call in and they share their problem. And there's two licensed professionals on there, and I'm on there twice a week, and we answer questions.
Amazing. Well, I'm so thankful we got to connect. Thank you for sharing all that you have been working on with us, and God bless with this book release. I'm excited to see what it does.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
I know there was a lot of information in that episode. I do hope you check out the How We Love website and Understanding Your Attachment Style, the book that Mark has released, and that it can support you, because I love what he said, that we are not, or how we are is not who we are. And we can become more secure if we make sense of our childhood story. It's worth it. I also love that he said you can't connect with an emotion that you are at the same time trying to change. So many good things in this episode. There is hope. There is an option. You are not stuck with these patterns. Naming your emotions, repairing after a conflict, listening to understand, leaning into that tension, and creating new habits. That is available to you. And so I'm thankful to get to share him with you. I'm going to pray over all of us. Lord, I know you created us, and I know you gave us the ability to heal, to change, and that you also gave us a redemptive story through Jesus. And I also know that we are imperfect, broken people, and we bump into each other, and we cause damage, and we say things we don't want to say, and we react in ways we don't want to react, and we build up walls, and push people away, and all the different things that we do to one another, and we don't want to. And so I pray, Lord, that whoever's listening, that you would fill them with hope, that there is a different way, and that they can repair what is broken in their marriage and the patterns that they have from their past, and that you are available, and that we could just come to you and not distract ourselves with scrolling and memes and just ignoring it. or pushing people so far away because we don't want to have to deal with the pain that, Lord, you made us for relationship and connection and community. And I pray that everyone listening can be healed through that community and time with you. Make us aware, grow us in all these things. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, our team has decided one more episode for 2025. I know, there's a lot more weeks in December, but we really want to enjoy our families. We know it's a busy time for everyone, and there's possibly several episodes this year that you've missed, so maybe you can go back and catch up with those. But we will be back next week with Mary DeMuth talking about the most overwhelmed women in the Bible. It's a super encouraging episode. And then we're going to have a little break and we'll be back January 5th. If you want to stay connected with me, remember I put out a weekly email every Tuesday. You can sign up at Ola Heather, Ola with an H like Heather. And I'll just pop in your inbox on Tuesdays with the show notes, with links to my favorite things, whether it's food that I've made my boys or fun stuff I found on Amazon or other places. But that's one way we can stay connected. All right. See you back here next week. Bye.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Don't Mom Alone podcast. If you're wanting to connect with more people and more resources to help remind you that you're not alone, head over to don'tmomalone.com. That's where you'll also find show notes with any links mentioned by our guests. Most importantly, I want you to know the good news, the great news that you're not alone because God has promised to always be with you. With faith in Jesus Christ, the one who died for you and rose again, Jesus said when he left, he was going to leave a helper, a comforter, to be with us. God in us. Moms, that's superpower. So while you're washing dishes at your kitchen sink, while you're driving to and from work, while you're feeding that baby late into the night, while you're cleaning sticky floors, God promises to be just as present with you as when you're worshiping in a church pew. As it says in Zephaniah 3:17, the Lord your God is with you. He is mighty to save. He takes great delight in you. He will quiet you with his love, and he will rejoice over you with singing. Now that's good news. Have a great day.